Hello and welcome to RazorPod. This is your host, Patrick Williams. Back to you after a week-long hiatus for reasons which we will explain herein. And no, those reasons were not because we were en route to the North Texas or coming from the Colorado State game. Yes, we did miss a week. Your podcast app is not malfunctioning, but we are back for what will likely be one of the most bizarre razor pods that you've ever heard because we get to dissect the Razorbacks. I don't even know the final score. 43-17 loss to North Texas. Is that right? 44-17?
44,
44-17. A home shellacking, the likes of which the Razorback program has not seen in many a long year. Comparisons to the worst loss in Razorback history, widely acknowledged to be the Citadel, have been thrown around. This North Texas team better than the Citadel. I think there's no doubt that we can all say that with confidence by the mere fact that they are a FBS team, not an FCS team. So a lot to dissect. 2 weeks, we'll not dwell on it, but we will mention, obviously, these two games can kind of be taken together in a certain to a certain extent. The Colorado State loss after leading 27-9 late in the third quarter, and then a game in which we were Razorbacks were never really competitive against North Texas. So to start the show, we got Johnny, I'm sorry, Jimmy G and Tom. Welcome, Jimmy G.
Thank you, Patrick. It's a pleasure to be here and be able to talk hog football after a hiatus.
And Tom, welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Patrick. I agree with Jimmy G. Good to be back.
The RazorPod crew, just by way of short explanation, was on the road last week on assignment. Our alternative podcast, HorsePod, had demanded our attention. So we were at Keeneland Racetrack evaluating the September horse sale, making sure that we have all our notes and our spreadsheets in order for the 2-year-olds and the rising 3-year-olds for the racing season next year. So RazorPods, again, alternative podcast HorsePod, did have a very successful run last week, and we've got all our information in line for this year's thoroughbred racing season. So that explains our absence.
Be sure to subscribe
for the low price of $29.95 per month.
HorsePod does not pick winners. HorsePod is merely an informational podcast.
HorsePod may or may not exist.
HorsePod should exist.
HorsePod would probably be even more successful than RazorPod, if that's even
It's impossible. Impossible.
But as a side note, Keeneland Racetrack, very nice. If you ever get the chance, you should go. As Ferris Bueller would say, it's so choice, and you would enjoy it highly. So, with that, let's just start with North Texas. We'll probably make references to Colorado State as we dwell or we delve into the North Texas analysis because
no, I'm going to dwell.
yeah, dwell as you will. Johnny, let's jump to you first. Get your take on North Texas.
Man, the Hogs really suck. I mean, we're really bad. I mean,
that's a wrap on tonight's show.
Can't say any better than that.
The end. I mean, we are so bad. I mean, I was struggling, in my hours of show prep leading up till tonight. I was really thinking about where we are the worst, and I was hard pressed to really nail that down. All kidding aside, the team has serious problems, top to bottom, talent wise, but, that's more than that. We can sit here and pick apart the X's and O's, and we probably will do that as far as quarterback play, especially offensive line play. But we all said it after that first game against Eastern Illinois. There's something else wrong. There were some really big red flags, and I think that you really saw that there, especially when the Boo Birds came out in the second half a little bit. we're not giving any effort, really. I didn't think we gave – I'm not talking even championship effort. I don't even think we gave C-minus or D-level effort. And there's no mental preparation, it seems. Especially you see things like that, fair catch, kick, punt return for a touchdown, mental breakdown, timeout on a kickoff, mental breakdown. I've never seen that before, ever. And I've been watching football for well over three decades, almost four decades.
Hey, John, let me interrupt you there. Was there ever any official explanation of what that was?
Why? They were apparently someone thought there were 12 men on the field and called a timeout. Instead of, I don't know, just kicking it and taking the penalty. I mean, and we only had 11, so it was not even correct.
Well, and so on top of that, and Jimmy G and I think we're talking about this on the way home from Horse Pod, that there is really no penalty to taking the 5-yard penalty there. I mean, they've moved it up and done all the fair catch rules that if you get it really anywhere inside the 10, odds are they're just going to take the fair catch anyway.
Absolutely no downside to just kicking the damn ball. None. But we called timeout, worked it all out, made sure counted noses, made sure, you know, had a peanut butter sandwich, counted noses, made sure it was okay. But, you know, I really think, and I'm not ready to lay it all at Morris's feet because I don't know. I know in any transition there's always some folks that don't buy in. And there's always some folks that don't like the transition or have hard feelings. I bet we wouldn't be surprised to find out that there's a really divided locker room. I've heard there's some bad blood brewing because Jonathan Nance is not playing. There's just a lot of that stuff flying around. Obviously, Cole Kelly is an absolute train wreck. Anyway, that's my high points.
Tom,
I mean, the house is literally on fire. I mean,
all good points. I want to pick at a couple of them, maybe give Tom a jumping off point next. Let's start with the punt return, one of the most bizarre plays in Razorback history.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I'd already actually gotten up and started walking away from the screen. And then, you know, they're like, whoa, hold on. Wait a minute. And sure enough, the North Texas guy is sprinting unmolested down the sideline and scored. You know, I mean, obviously it was a failure on the part of Arkansas special teams to, you know, not stay there until they were sure he was down. I'm a little bit, I don't know if forgiving is the right word, but it's a little bit more understanding today's climate where there's such a focus on people not getting drilled, that may have had something to do with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was probably I've never seen anything like it. It was a smart play by them, and they certainly fooled us. They probably didn't even need it to be that smart to fool us, but it was pretty clever. I don't think they'll be able to do it again. And somebody, one of their guys, if he does a half fair catch in the future, may get drilled for it. But it worked against us. I guess that's what matters.
Well, and I'll just throw a couple notes in there just from perusing college football sites. I read somewhere that the NCAA is actually considering an emergency rule change midseason to say where a player doesn't advance the ball, he essentially gives himself up and cannot advance the ball. That's one thing I saw. The other thing, and this is just a thought I had, is that, you know, maybe not even North Texas or Arkansas, but somebody somewhere, there's a meathead special teams coach who goes, "That's never going to happen to me. You knock that guy's block off every time he touches the ball, and someone's really going to get hurt."
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think it was clever, but
it's a little bush. It's a little bush. I mean, that didn't matter in the game, but it's a little bush.
Yeah. Well, the NCAA thing is false. They came out and said today they don't know where that guy started, but they're not looking into changing that rule right now.
Oh, fake news. Fake news.
Fake news. but is that not the rule in the NFL, though?
I know it is on kickoffs. I don't know about.
Okay. Because if you don't immediately return it, you've given yourself up. It did make a difference in the game, and it made us just look stupid. But that's a little bush, because I agree with what Logan said. I mean, if you turn your head the wrong way, you might get kicked out of the game. So it's like, anyway.
All right. Jimmy G, you haven't had an opportunity to jump in on the game, so help yourself.
Well, I don't know what really I can add. It was just it started out bad. We were down 17-0. Kelly was throwing the ball over the yard. I remember them – we talked about this during the game Saturday, that the announcers were just gushing. The one throw out route he threw before the receiver made his break. And they're like, oh, what a great throw. And, like, that was the one out of however many passes he threw that he actually made the pass with the break. And, I mean, I feel bad for the kid because he's not a quarterback that can run Morris's system. And maybe the freshmen are, but he and Story, neither one are cut out to run that system. And so I'm with Johnny. I don't want to lay this all at Morris's feet. There's a total overhaul going on. There's not a lot of talent on campus. The pass defense, though, just getting ripped apart by North Texas is concerning because, I mean, everybody told us that, you know, Curl he got beat a lot last year, but they moved him to safety. But he was a good athlete, good instincts. Ryan Pulley was coming back. Chevin Callaway, you know, that's why they moved Curl to safety because he was impressive. And, you know, Santos Ramirez, who was, my Lord, that was one series that Santos Ramirez pretty much led North Texas down to the end zone. but he was supposed to be a, you know, really good run support safety and then can not really miss a lot of assignments. And the secondary is, you know, not really doing the job right now. And the defensive line, which had some promise, some quality SEC type players we thought coming this season, is not getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And then I know the Bumper Pool, just say that name, Hog fans go crazy. And he's a solid player, but we really need Dre Greenlaw to get back in the lineup. I'm afraid Greenlaw is going to tell everybody that his ankle is like, I think Patrick and I talked about this Sunday, that Greenlaw is just going to every week warm up and say, it's a little gimpy. I don't want to get out there. Not
a way. Got to hurt the team. I'm going to hurt the team.
Yeah. But man, we sure need Greenlaw back. I mean, he probably still leads the team in tackles just based off that first quarter against Eastern Illinois.
Yeah.
It's certainly deflating. The score got away a little bit because of six interceptions. But North Texas, they were the better team, clearly. And, you know, I think I mentioned this last week, too, that after we lost that Colorado State game, it was the quotes we heard from the players and the coaches were the exact same quotes we heard in 2012 after that John L. Smith team lost to Monroe in Little Rock the week before Alabama about how, we're ready. We're ready to go. We're pumped up. But like when you saw the interviews, it was monotone, glassy look in the eyes, same exact quotes. And you're thinking, this team's not ready. And I think Johnny mentioned the buy-in. And I know some of y'all have seen it, that Nebraska lineman talking about buy-in.
Right.
Little 2-minute video clip's been circulating on Twitter and Facebook and all the social media sites. I know Tom's probably just on Snapchat. I don't know if it's hit that yet.
It hadn't yet. I've been on it most of the day.
Okay. Maybe Instagram stories.
You wouldn't know because it disappears.
Instagram stories.
But it's just talking about how important buy-in is. And, you know, if we're hearing, you know, Johnny mentioned that, you know, some of these guys are upset and that, I'm sorry, if Morris is going to run this program, he needs to tell those guys to go. Either buy in now, do what you're supposed to be doing. I'm the coach. I'm the captain now, that thing. And just tell them to go if they're not going to buy in and they're not going to be part of the program. And, you know, his recruiting class looks solid. It's if we can keep those guys. So I want to see if Morris can recruit well, get top 20 classes in here in 3 or 4 years. Then at that point, you can say, yeah, he can't cut it on game day, even if he's got some talent here. But we've at least got to get him a chance to get his players in here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with any of that. I think the bottom line on that is, what choice do we have, right?
I mean, really. Exactly.
You're not going to do anything. You're not going to do anything this year. You're not going to do anything next year. And I don't mean to pump sunshine because it is a dark time, but one of the guys at work forwarded me an article about the current starters and the number and quality of offers that they had, i.e. it had the list of everybody who's a starter and how many total offers they had and how many SEC offers they had, and compared them to next year's recruits. So the theory being that, you know, Morris is clearly going after a higher quality of player, and it was no comparison at all. I mean, the current starters had an average of 3.2 SEC offers, and next year's recruits that guys already committed have like 4.5 SEC offers on average. So I know with 11 or 22, even that can maybe get skewed a little bit, but I mean, that's a telling statistic right there that he's, it's so trite to say, but help is on the way.
Well, but okay. And I agree with that. And I'm fine with being patient. And if we go out, because what's going to happen the next 3 weeks, we're going to get the absolute snot beat out of us because we're playing teams that are bigger, stronger, and faster. And who, if we go out and lose just based on talent, I really don't have a problem because I understand we're rebuilding. We've all seen it. I mean, go back to Petrino. I know that's the one we always kind of look at and say, you know, we played, you know, Texas, Alabama, and Florida back to back to back and got just poleaxed in two of those three games. And then the third one, we kind of held in for about three quarters. I can live with that. You know, I wasn't even surprised if we lost North Texas. I would have picked us to lose if we'd have been able to do a show. But it's the way we lost. The absolute not giving a damn. The absolute lack of seeming preparedness, sharpness, and all the like the little things. That's what makes – if you want my opinion, that's why people booed. That's not – it's not the fact that we lost, really. It's just the way it happened. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. Then the fact that it, you know, the big argument is, are they booing Cole Kelly? Not booing Cole Kelly. They're booing the fact that you put him out there after four interceptions and he trots back out there after halftime. I mean, there's no coach in America who would do that to a kid. And I know maybe
especially when we've been playing quarterback musical chairs. It didn't make sense.
It's a pretty good jumping off segue to this coming week's game. And then for Morris to say what he said in the press conference about, I didn't want to put him in that position down that many points, but yet you played the freshman. Okay.
That's
a little weird, but the game was out of hand. So maybe there's some logic there. But then you come out on Monday and say, Story's our starter this week.
No matter what. No matter what
happens in practice.
So it was not – that was probably the most concerning part of a very concerning weekend, him coming out and saying that.
I mean, what does that even mean?
That means that the Cole Kelly experiment is over.
Wow, I thought Ty Story was – I mean, we were talking about it. He might as well just pack up his bags and leave if he can't get into this game. And then Monday, oh, he's our man. So what? Okay.
That was so strange. I mean, we were all
bizarre
about it. I mean, okay, well, with that jumping off point, let's talk Auburn because – that's going to be a heck of a lot of fun on the Saturday night. Jimmy G, let's start with you. We got to go down to the Plains and play a wounded, mad But still pretty good Auburn team on Saturday night.
Well, yes, and an Auburn team that may have the second-best defensive line in the country behind Clemson, an Auburn team that's got to be just fuming at blowing that LSU game. I think they're up 21-13, fairly deep into the fourth quarter, and then lose on a last-second field goal. And you know they can run the ball. Stidham's a veteran quarterback. I don't know. I can sort of see this game not getting as crazy as like everybody thinks it is, but I don't think it's going to be like Ole Miss Alabama 62-7. But because I think Auburn is going to be upset, but I also think you know those games like that take a little bit out of you. So they'll do what they need to do, but I don't see us throwing the ball enough times to throw six picks. We don't really lay the ball on the ground too much, so we'll punt a lot. God, I can't believe I just said that.
This boy, sign me up for this game.
Get Fable, roll space ball. It's here.
Yeah,
it's here. It's here. Hey, we're gonna punt a lot.
This is death. I heard on the thing today that Malzahn said, you know, Morris, he did a good job at Clemson. Just got to give him time. He'll get it done at Arkansas. He'll get it done there. We've already got the pity train going.
Oh man, that was a Razor Pod classic. We're going to punt a lot.
I think I've got to finish my analysis of that. To my pick segment, Patrick.
Classic Razor Pod moment. We're going to punt a lot.
That's so true.
That's yeah, I can't argue with a word of it.
Johnny, to you next. Why don't you talk a little bit about this Auburn game?
I think they are going to – I don't think they can hold the score down very much. I agree with Jimmy G. Auburn's defensive line is their strength. And as we've all seen, our offensive line is clearly a weakness. I think we are going to be stoned at the line of scrimmage, and Ty Story might get hurt because I just cannot see us keeping that D line off of him. And you know, it was Olay most of the last two games on our quarterbacks against 1-3 Colorado State and North Texas. So I think it's going to be just party at the quarterback. And it's just – it's going to be – I frankly can't see us scoring except maybe a garbage touchdown. I get Jimmy G's point. You know, those games do take it out of you. And I do think that – I don't know. Gus likes to beat Arkansas and run. He's put some big numbers on us before. I just don't see how we're going to stop him from doing it again.
Yeah, and we kind of had this discussion. I can't remember if it was – on the car ride home, Jimmy G, or if it was just generally while we were doing horse pod, but that Gus's offense is not the kind of thing that can be slowed down. I mean, he may not want to run it up on us. Our run defense can get bad. I mean, we've seen it, and I kind of harken back to, if that's the right word, the 56-3 game from a couple years back.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we went in there thinking we had actually had a pretty good little run, and thought we were doing pretty well, and they came in there and just ran the ball right at us. And I wouldn't say they pulled up at any point in that game.
No. We're going to punt a lot. And, you know, there's just – I just don't see a situation where we're going to be able to keep them under 50, and I don't think we're going to score. If we score a touchdown, it might be late.
Wow.
someone has to explain to me how. I mean, there's the problems, especially offensively, are myriad. And I think, I've said my piece.
Tom, your chance to to talk. I'll throw one thing out there and then let you go. As Jimmy G and I were kind of talking about pre-show, just when you think the gamblers, you know, can't miss, got to – free money on Auburn, you know, at least the Hogs it's likely they might cover the big spread. I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, it started off at 20, what, seven?
Yeah.
I think it's 30 now, last I heard. I don't think they're going to cover it. Arkansas. I think Auburn will win handily. I don't see us scoring with a regular offense more than, I don't know, 10. If we, you know, and that's probably a late score. I mean, just hard for me to imagine us putting any off. I mean, Auburn is a really, really good defense. And we are not a good offense. We're starting, I guess, Ty Story again, which is good, except he was our fourth choice last week. And
is that sounds bad? Is that bad?
Right. And so, you know, our running game is pretty poor, except against Colorado State. Running backs are not altogether effective. Right. The offensive line is pretty bad. If the spread is 30, like I think, and our kind of high water mark is 10, that means all they got to get to is 40. And I think it's going to be pretty hard for them not to score more than 40. So, I look for another, 35, 40 point loss.
I don't really want to dissect this game, but I looking ahead about 3 weeks, I'm really worried for like player safety issues when Alabama's in Fayetteville. That's the kind of game this team that scares me. And I'm being honest, I think we're gonna get some players hurt in that game. I don't know, but as bad as it's gonna be against Auburn, I'm sure A&M will beat us by about 4 touchdowns. But that Alabama game can get scary bad.
Yeah, in that game, we just need to hand off a lot and play just try not to get our quarterbacks destroyed.
Yeah.
Throw tight end drags, stuff like that, whatever.
I know you're laughing, Logan. I think you are. I am too.
I think that's what we'll do.
I think that's what we'll do. Well, they won't say this, obviously, but I think the game plan will definitely be whatever keeps the clock running, let's do that.
Really? Ole Miss was like one of the most explosive offenses in the country. They scored on their first drive, and I don't think they crossed midfield again or something like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And Ole Miss's offense is 10 times better than our offense.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I mean, I hate to say dangerous, but – you know, let's say it's 60-3 or something. I mean, what's he going to do? You know, is he going to put poor John Stephen Jones out there? I mean,
no, please no.
The only saving – well, it may not be a saving grace – is the bad – even worse thing is Alabama's the road team. They're not going to have 100-something players. You can only take 70 players on the road. So they're not going to have their walk-ons at that game. Because it's a road game. So even if they put their scrubs in, it's going to be second stringers.
Maybe they'll just bring their walk-ins and leave their starters rest. We're going to let them rest this week.
Oh, that's not possible.
I mean, I appreciate the concerns when we play Alabama a couple weeks. I think y'all are underestimating what's about to happen in about 72 hours. I don't see us slowing down. I just can't see it.
I'm just saying Auburn's good, of course, but they're not a machine like Alabama is.
Right. True. I say Auburn 48-10.
All right. Well, okay.
Jumping ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were giving – I'm sorry.
That's all right.
It's time.
We can end this an interesting segment. I'm going to say Auburn – oh, heck, why not? 52, Arkansas 17. Tom?
Auburn 49, Arkansas 7.
And Patrick Williams.
Patrick,
give us some take, too. You hadn't really given us a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with anything that everybody has said here. It's the same stuff we're worried about. We're not good. We're not at the point where we can establish – even any sort of identity. It just this does not feel like a good situation. I mean, I agree, Jimmy G, it's not as bad as what we're likely to face in Alabama or against Alabama. But I'm going to call the same score as 2 years ago, 56-3.
Ooh. All right, well, should be a rough night on the plains for the Hogs. Luckily, none of us made the decision to go over to that game, so what a waste of money that would be. All right, the rest of the games don't really get much better. It's really a weak slate in college football, which usually means chaos will ensue. So we'll start out in the SEC. The 2:30 game, I believe, Texas A&M, off their near upset of Clemson, is now taking the show on the road at Alabama, who, after what everybody thought maybe was one of those, to use a boxing analogy, a puncher's chance game with Ole Miss's wild offense. No, that was a beat down, 62-7. Alabama just keeps rolling along. Let's see. Tom?
I'm sorry. Was it Alabama A&M?
Yes.
Alabama, I think, you know, I think I saw this too. A&M is ranked, right? Like they're 22nd. I think so. They're a 27.5 point underdog.
They are. That's correct.
That's remarkable.
And you're ranked.
Right. I mean, Alabama is just, the way they've started off this season, this may be the best Alabama team in the Saban era. And obviously that's saying something. You know, they were, Tua is 13 of 13 on third down this year. I mean, every stat you can possibly look at, they're playing on a different level from even top 25 teams, much less us. And you know, I do think that Jimbo obviously has got that team playing well. They played against a very good Clemson team and battled them throughout. They're going to have Alabama's full attention, which is probably bad news for them. I think they wind up sticking around for a quarter or so and probably won't get absolutely throttled like Ole Miss, but it's still going to be obviously a comfortable win. I'm going to go Alabama 45, A&M 17.
All right. Patrick.
Yeah, I like Logan's analysis. I mean, the momentum from that game is probably going to really help Texas A&M against Clemson. I mean, never underestimate, especially in college, the power of faith, I guess, for lack of a better term. You know, they're going to be hyped, and I think it's going to be exactly what Logan said, enough to get you through about a quarter and a half. Maybe to halftime, you know, if everything goes well. It's just too tough of a lift for a team with a new coach. And I know he's Jimbo Fisher, and he's got a pedigree and a national championship and all that. It's Alabama. It's just not going to happen. I'll say it's something like 24-21 at half, and then completely gets out of hand in the second half, 52-31, Alabama.
All right. Yeah, obviously Alabama is a smart play. They're at home. They're just rolling. Tagovailoa, obviously the right choice to be their starting quarterback. Hurts still able to come in and do some things for them. I you know, no reason to go. A&M. The night game at home against Clemson really battled back and got into that game and nearly stole one there at the end. But this is a different animal. I like Alabama pretty handily. Let's see. Gosh, I like y'all's scores a little bit. I'll say Alabama 49, A&M 13. And Tagovailoa probably won't improve on his third down numbers against Arkansas because I can't see them getting in too many third downs while he's still in the game against our defense. But all right, Johnny, take us home.
You know, if anybody's set up to have a little bit of success on Alabama, it might be a team like A&M. You know, with big receivers that can look down the field, Mon can stretch the field a little bit. Now they threw for over 400 yards against Clemson. They've got some air capabilities, but you know, Jimmy G made mention, so I looked it up because I really wanted to make sure I wasn't out in the weeds on this. But Alabama gave up a 75-yard touchdown pass to Ole Miss, and then the rest of the game gave up 58 yards on 6 completions.
Gosh.
So, good luck with that. You know, I think y'all have hit the points. I'm not really convinced yet this is the best Alabama defense because I've seen some really good ones. But this may very well be their most explosive offense. They are so good, and with a real serious downfield passing attack, I mean, they can just about name their score. They're just too good. Yeah, maybe A&M breaks a long pass. They've got big receivers. They're physical on the edges. So I'm not saying they're going to get, like, shut out, but I think if they score, it'll be, you know, maybe a bust early, maybe a bust late. I'll take Alabama, final score, 49-14.
All right. Well, as I said, the slate was fairly light this week. We're going to Big 12 country next. Texas, fresh off their dominating win at home against USC, hosting TCU, who played just a wildly entertaining game against Ohio State, Jerry World, last Saturday night. After the crew wrapped up Horse Pod, we enjoyed watching that game on television. Some lively banter. And also noticed that that game looked like it was run at like 78.5 RPMs compared to whatever the hog speed of about 33 1/3. So TCU, some fantastic athletes, really good team. But Texas looks like they're bouncing back from that opening loss to Maryland. And they're, I guess, what they won by a touchdown over Tulsa. So we'll see what this has in store. TCU, I believe, is a 3 or 3.5 point favorite, depending on where you look. Let's see. I'll start. I think TCU is the better team. I don't know what they're going to have in the tank, especially going up on the road after that game with Ohio State. But, you know, Texas really had a big game themselves against USC. And it's the Big 12 opener for both teams. I saw an interesting stat today from in Pat Forty's column that the Big 12 was done with all out-of-conference games. Because, you know, they play that 9-game conference schedule. They played no more non-conference games. So these teams are stepping into it now, and they'll just stay within their conference until it's time for bowl season. But I like TCU. I think they're, along with Oklahoma, are – the class of the Big 12 this year, and I can't see them getting tripped up here, but I do think Texas gives them a pretty good battle, but TCU pulls it out. Too much athleticism. God, who would ever thought that? I mean, so I was talking, TCU without athlete Texas. TCU 34, Texas 24. Johnny?
Agree with that analysis. I really thought TCU acquitted themselves very well against Ohio State. You know, Texas with a nice win against USC. USC is breaking in a freshman quarterback who still had a fair amount of passing yards against Texas. I just like TCU's athletes. I like their speed. Texas defense can be susceptible to the air. I look for those speedy receivers to get deep on Texas a little bit, maybe break some big plays. You know, Texas is showing signs. I will give them that. Now, I would, even though they're 2-1, and I'm going to pick them to be 2-2 after this week, but they are showing signs. If I was a Texas fan, I could at least be encouraged. As an Arkansas fan, I'm a little bit jealous of that. So I'll take TCU, final score, 30. I got a little bit swamped, 30-26.
Tom Logan?
I'm also going to go with TCU for many of the same reasons. I was really impressed with TCU against Ohio State, which you absolutely were a great, great football game. Very.
You didn't seem impressed Saturday night.
Well, I was. I was.
Well, there was a lot of targeting, Jimmy G. That's the problem.
And I think it seems like Texas, big win for them this weekend. The only thing that gave me a little pause is that, you know, that game was so great against Ohio State. It's probably going to be good that they're going on the road and kind of regroup, but I just think they're a better football team right now, and I'm going to go with the better football team. TCU 41-28.
Oh, Patrick Williams.
Set up on a T.
On a T.
Why not? The home dog.
Eyes
of Texas are upon us.
Oh, yes.
All the live long day, working on the railroad, you know, all that good stuff. Yeah, I'll hold my nose and pick Texas. It's not without some basis in reality. I mean, that's a tough game to bounce back from, man. I mean, you're sitting there and have to come up, play Ohio State and sort of be – maybe not in control is the right word, but at least in the game and hanging in there and at times look like you have the upper hand and then just to let it get away from you at the end. Really in self-inflicted stuff. Got to be hard on TCU. Short turnaround. You got to come back and now deal with that. I'm going to pick Texas. Riding the momentum from the USC win. Score 31-29.
Oh, wow.
Good one.
That's going to be good. Well, Patrick, we'll just go right back to you. The big Pac-12 battle, I believe ABC primetime. Game day is going to be there, which tells you all you need to know about this week's slate of games. Stanford at Oregon. Mario Cristobal's first big test as a Ducks coach. Patrick?
I'm going to pick Stanford to go on the road and get it done. Just new coach like that, don't really have a lot of record or faith. Stanford looks tough. USC is a little bit of a house of cards. So this is I'm going out on a limb a little bit. It's not my favorite pick ever, but I'm going to pick Stanford to go on the road just because I think the Pac-12 really needs that Stanford-Washington matchup to be in play late in the year. So yeah, I don't love it, but Stanford in a Stanford-esque kind of game, 22-18 Stanford.
Let's see. I'll take I'll take Oregon. No, I'm not. I'm not going to take yes, I'm going to take Oregon. I don't know. I don't really like the Cristobal hire. I thought he kind of got shafted at Florida International, especially when they brought in Ron Turner to replace him. But, you know, Oregon, rebuilding them is a whole different ball game than taking Florida International to the St. Petersburg Bowl or wherever they went. But, you know, they're at home, Austin Stadium, semi-night game. I guess 7 o'clock our time will be 5 o'clock their time. Early evening start. Why not? Stanford's looked a little bit shaky this year. So I'll take Oregon in the top one. The 30-27. I know it's not going to be that high scoring, but what the heck. Johnny.
You know, last year Stanford beat Oregon 49-7. And we've always said it. Do you improve 42 points in 1 year? I don't think so. I'm taking Stanford. I think Bryce Love's supposed to be back full speed. I just like Stanford. They got their machine a lot more well oiled than Cristobal's going to have. Cristobal has his certainly. The Oregon, I think, is, you know, they've kind of fallen on some tough times from the Chip Kelly years, but I just think Stanford's in a better place. Even though I think that Oregon's going to put the ball in the air quite a few times with Herbert and probably have a little bit of success. Just like the way Stanford plays. Final score, 27-17.
Dom?
Stanford, I agree with most of what was said. Not convinced about Cristobal at Oregon. He's probably definitely going to move the program forward, but I don't think he's going to move it enough this quickly, at least, to get Stanford up. They're a good, solid, very good defense. I think they're going to keep them in check and win 21-6.
Wow. Another snoozer in the Pac-12. okay, well, Patrick Williams has been waiting for this. Probably all 15 years of Razor Pod, or 16 or 12 or however long we've been on the air. I was the featured national game.
Oh!
Wisconsin, the Badgers, visiting Iowa City. I'm not saying it's going to happen, Iowa City, but our fearless host, you know, if Ferentz sent a jet, might be willing to get on it and make a late driving trip to Iowa City for this game. Wisconsin's coming off an inexplicable home loss to BYU, and Iowa is still undefeated, not untested. They did play Iowa State, who gave the Sooners a bit of a battle last Saturday. So, 3-point favorite, I believe, for Wisconsin going into Iowa. We'll start with Johnny Fable.
You know, I heard somebody break down this game earlier. I was in my car, I was on the radio, and they made a really good point. They said, you know, usually if Wisconsin plays a team that can match them in the trenches or at least battle them to a standstill, they have a tendency to lose. And he made a really good point. That team is usually someone like Iowa. And Iowa's very tough on both lines. They're not going to do anything crazy. They're almost a mirror image of Wisconsin. And you know, I think that was a pretty apt description. So I'm going with the home dog here. I think Iowa – I'm not necessarily saying they out-Wisconsin, but they can hold their own in that smash mouth – in the trenches, old time, gray skies, Big Ten, you know, old Nelly type of game. So I'm going to go with the Hawkeyes. Tough game, very physical. I'm going with a, you know, really exciting final score of 9-7. So I'm going
high scoring.
Enough safeties.
I'm going Iowa 9-7 over Whiskey.
All right, Tom Logan.
I'm going to go with Iowa. I don't know. I don't know what's up with Wisconsin. You lose to BYU at home. I mean, come on. That's a big red flag. Maybe the Wisconsin steamrolling downhill running machine is not quite where it was. Iowa playing some solid football, as Jimmy G mentioned, against a tough, well-coached Iowa State squad, whipped up on them, and now they've got Wisconsin at home. Huge early season game with big implications for the champions, the legends, the leaders division, whichever one they're in, maybe both. So I'm going to go with Iowa in a good one, 13-12.
Wow.
I think what everyone can agree on, this is going to be a total rock fight.
Well, I'm going to take Wisconsin because I think they bring more – they bring bigger rocks to the fight. I think they're going to – I think that was a little bit of a fluke last week against BYU. I hope that Wisconsin is nowhere near the playoff talk, though, because their schedule's pillow soft after this. So I hope they're nowhere near the playoff talk, even if they are 11-1 or 12-1. But I do think they're going to get up on the Hawkeyes, and they're going to be kind of upset with what happened last week. So I'm going to take Wisconsin 23-10 over the Hawkeyes. Patrick?
Yeah, it kind of was feeling like the conspiracy on a reverse double up to catch up there, so – wasn't sure quite what was going on with Tom and Johnny, but now all is right with the world. Jimmy G's evened it out. I'm going to go with the Hawkeyes, make this a 3-1 on the if there was ever any doubt. This is a Kinnick special. You know, one of them's coming every year. It's got to be a high ranked team coming there for a night game. Last year, Ohio State got the brunt of it. Year before, it was Penn State, Michigan. The list of luminaries to come to die in Iowa City is long. Wisconsin will be next. I'm going to go opposite of the Rock Fight. I'm going to say it's a 31-34 barn burner with the Miguel Recinos field goal to finalize the deal.
All right, so the over for Patrick Williams.
Yeah, unusual.
Let's see. Telling a little bit about where these programs are, that Nebraska's playing Michigan and Florida and Tennessee are playing, and those games weren't national games, even with this week's slate of games. So just see how even, you know, Arkansas is obviously way down, but it's, you know, they're not the only program. There's some other programs that are struggling, especially I'm talking about Tennessee and Michigan. Not Michigan so much, but Nebraska. And then even Florida to a lesser degree, but still losing to Kentucky for the first time in 31 years. So you see what happens when some of the big name programs fall off. You get Saturday slates like this. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll see if one of those two games sneaks its way on, though, to the board. That'd be our sleeper picks. So who would like to go first?
I'll go with one. I'll go with the Pac-12 After Dark heater that's lingering out there. Herm Edwards and the ASU Sun Devils going to Seattle for a fun date with the Huskies. I don't know how he's going to do it, what witchcraft he's going to pick up to make it happen, but he's going to have the Devils ready to roll in Seattle. And Herm's going to pick up the wacky win, 15-11 ASU.
Wow, that will be something else. Washington overcame the blackout at Utah last week. That's so.
They haven't had to deal with Herm yet, man.
No, that'll be a whole new ball game.
I got one.
Okay, Johnny.
I'm going to give a little homage to the Bluegrass State. Kentucky's a 10-point home dog to Mississippi State. Both teams undefeated. Have looked good at times. So I'm just going to say that that Kentucky gets it done. Fitzgerald twists an ankle in the first quarter, slows down that Mississippi State offense just enough, and Cats nip them at the wire,
38-37. All right. Tom?
I'm going to stay in the SEC, where South Carolina goes to Nashville, Tennessee, and takes on the Commodores, who are undefeated for the first time in three decades. I never even know if that's true. But anyway, Vandy playing better football this year, already looking ahead to their trip to Fayetteville.
They're the only ones.
I think they get it done against Will Muschamp and South Carolina.
Wow.
That's right. They're going to do it 20-17.
All right. I am also going to stay in, a team from the Bluegrass State, but they're going to be on the road at Virginia. Bobby Petrino with Louisville. 5-point underdogs to the Cavs, and I think they're going to go over to Charlottesville and take care of business. I'll say Louisville 27, Virginia 24. And before we go, the records this year: Johnny's 10-2, Patrick 9-3, and Tom and I are 8-4.
I mean, anybody's game. Anybody's game.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right. Well, thank you, Jimmy G, as always, for your handling of the picks. Well done. And, again, we just a note of explanation, we did not make any picks last week, and so we're just chalking that up as a bye week for the pod crew.
Much deserved.
Horse Pod simply did not have any ability for us to get away and do picks. There's too much going on with Horse
We
Pod.
Don't make picks unless we're thoroughly prepared.
That's right.
It really
too much is at stake.
It's a disservice to you, our listeners, to be honest. So, you know, we're nothing but servicing for you. Okay, Tom Logan, we have mail.
We do. We have quite a bit. I probably won't be able to get to it all as we've been stacking up in the old mail run, mail room down there. We've had to flip through a few, but we'll go to our old friend FNG. For those of you who are new to Razor Pod, that's Friday Night Guy. He wrote in first, curious why we weren't there. And then he made the comment that many of us, of course, FNG has been a long time Ty Story supporter, that one of many,
but maybe the only one outside of Charleston.
Right. He was very upset that Ty Story didn't get in the game, but even more flummoxed that, he was named the starter immediately following. I think he made a couple of other good points about the last couple of games, which are, you know, the lack of talent talking point, which is fine if you're playing SEC powerhouses, but can we really get away with saying that when we give up an 18-point lead against Colorado State and they get pounded by North Texas at home? Probably not. And then he notes – going back to the old Burt years, which aren't too long ago, you know, the fourth quarter collapses, the how did that happen, but he never really felt embarrassed to be watching the squad like he did against North Texas. I'm not sure I would agree with that. I've been embarrassed a lot lately. Last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. But I understand the point, and we'll see what Ty Story does against the Auburn Tigers this week. So Tracy, our old friend Tracy in Tulsa, his title of his email was put very bluntly, which is worst ever. Are we the worst ever Razorback team? Is that the worst ever loss in Razorback history? I don't agree. I agree that the Citadel is a worse loss. I'm not sure that the team that lost to the Citadel wouldn't beat this one. At least right now, they just look like they're failing on every conceivable level right now. And it's hard to imagine them bouncing back after this one and winning any SEC game or any game against anyone for that reason matter, 45-7, like we did against South Carolina after the Citadel game when we switched to Joe Kines. Back to the present, our old friend Ty from Fayetteville immediately in response to some questions of whether Ty in Fayetteville was in fact Ty Story. He refutes the allegation, but plainly he is not Ty Story and does not wish to be associated with him. Very disappointed after the Colorado State game and had picked correctly that North Texas would win, although he gave us a little bit more credit. He thought it would just be 34-21. That's going back a little bit, but I thought it was worth but we didn't quite live up to Ty and Fayetteville's pick. Our old friend Ken wrote in. He was happy to hear from us. I'm sure he was disappointed that we weren't there next week. But, of course, there's always a Horse Pod to look forward to. he does notice that the honeymoon for may not have lasted more than two games for Chad Morris. I think he's definitely not on the honeymoon anymore. I think the North Texas loss eliminated that. Too many red flags to do that, and I'm not sure that we're going to get an annulment, but there may be trouble ahead. And that is the majority of the mailbag. Thanks for everybody writing in and hanging with us. Back to you.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate your efforts as always. And let's see, I guess it's time for rants. So, I would be shocked and amazed, somewhat chagrined if there were no rants this week. Would anyone like to lead us off on the rant segment?
Would someone please, I'm not going to rant, would someone please rant about the timeout on the kickoff? Have we covered that on the air?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, I thought
we did.
We talked about it.
All right.
That's a good one.
It is a good one. We talked about the fake punt or the fake punt return. Gosh,
I've got one, and it's probably not going to be very popular, but I've got to address the issue with the booing. You know, I've probably got a couple fairly unpopular takes on that, but you know, we've mentioned it before on the show that, you know, it stopped being about Old State U long ago in college football. People always say, hey, if it's professional athletes, you know, you can boo them all you want, but these are just kids. And I do agree with that. I do agree with that to some reason. I'm not a booer. I'm really not. But when you see, you know, and I've even used this whole cliche before, when the TV deals start with $1 billion, we're not talking about kids just doing it for the old alma mater anymore. So I don't know if that analogy really pans out. Number two, you know, Jared Cornelius went out to the media and basically chastised the fans, you know, for booing Cole Kelly. And it's up for debate who they were really booing. It's probably a little bit of both. But I really think that's pretty bad. I mean, the only thing a player should say at that point is, I understand the fans are upset. We're going to get it better. It wasn't necessarily he seemed upset with the performance, but that somebody's feelings got hurt. I just thought that was the optics of that spoke so loudly where I think the team's head is, that they're less concerned about their play than what some of the fans might have done. I think that just speaks a lot of volumes. Again, I'm not a booer, don't necessarily like it, but you know, I think we're being, you know, they don't necessarily say that when they call you for donations or jack up ticket prices or charge you $6 for a Coca-Cola. So I don't know. It stinks. It's not fun for anybody, but to basically have the players not be upset with their performance as much as they are with a couple fans and with the money changing hands, I don't know. I don't know if this is something that is really holds true much anymore. Maybe that's an unpopular take.
No, I don't disagree with you. I think what Cornelius said was disingenuous, really. I mean, there's some question, and I didn't hear the actual question he was asked, whether he was responding to a question or whether he was sort of freelancing and making a statement. And
no, he got asked a question. But the answer is we're really disappointed in how we played, and we're going to get that right. Not basically shaking his head and saying, "Man, these fans, I don't know what's happening."
They suck as bad as we do.
They suck. You know.
Plus, those are the fans that were actually still inside the stadium.
Right. Yeah, they're probably the best fans they have.
There's not any more diehards than the folks that were in there.
That's a great point.
In the second half. Those people were like, because I know where I would have been had I been in Fayetteville, and it would not have been inside Razorback Stadium.
I mean, basically, the people who were booing had stayed for the feces show. Everything about that just climbed all over me. I was like, wait a minute. You didn't say you played like crap. You didn't say you should be embarrassed. Didn't even really have much remorse, but you guys, the like Jimmy G says, the guys who stuck it out, those are the bad guys. I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I thought I was gonna have the most unpopular rant of all time on Razor Pod.
No, I mean, there's just no good when that kind of stuff starts happening. It's just kind of a no win situation, right? Because what are we gonna the recruiting side of it, I mean, you can kind of decide what you want about that, whether you think that really matters.
I don't think it matters one bit.
I think the way the world is today, that playing time is of critical importance, that anybody who sees how bad we are, but knows that we have a guy with the pedigree of Chad Morris, you know, that has developed and is a big part of Clemson's success, that's not going to be a turnoff. That's going to be a, man, I can get here and I don't have to wait. I can play. And if you have enough faith in your ability, I think it's positive. I mean, the fact that our fans boo, I mean, if you're a player, do you care? Because you know they won't boo if you're any good.
The issue is we are in year 7 of a rebuild. At what point have the fans done their part with buying tickets? At what point have they done their part of not booing? At what point have they done their part about, you know, rooting people on message boards and Twitter? At what point have we done our share in this 7-year rebuild?
Well, because you know why we like we're hearing that the fans haven't done their part? Because it's the same old 6 guys in Arkansas media that are some reason think that they're part of the program.
Yeah, and exactly.
That's who has the biggest voice in this state. And so their sensibilities are those of 70-year-old men think that recruiting is the same as it was in their day when Billy Bob just wanted to be a hog. And if the fans were booing his beloved Hogs, heaven forbid, I'm not going to set foot on campus if they're booing my buddies. Look, these dudes that are big-time recruits, like I think y'all alluded to it, they do not care. They're like, can we get on the field? Can we play in the SEC? And are we in front of 80,000 people? Are we on ESPN, CBS? That's what they want. And can we go to the league if we're good enough? That's what they care about. And can we get a little cash while we're doing it? That the booing the fans, my gosh, Dudley Dawson and those guys just go bananas. The recruits are in the stadium.
Oh, gosh.
Calm down. God almighty. Our basketball team has stunk for 20 years. It doesn't mean we can't recruit. You know, we've had a couple of big recruiting classes. So I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think we'll be fine on the recruiting front. We need to find a coach that can do both things.
Right. Well, and the other thing, I think what hurts more than recruiting is, or more than recruiting booing, they certainly don't care about that. What they do care about is looking up and nobody's there. That may matter. But even then, that's probably a secondary concern.
I mean, they're really not – they can't be that dumb to go that a middling program like us, when we're 1 and whatever we're going to end up being this year, is going to roll them out, you know, 180 people in the stand, or you know, 80,000 in the stands every week. I mean, I know 18-year-old kids are not the smartest people in the history of the world, but they're football players. They're big time. They know what the deal is. And you're not going to come or not come to Arkansas because of that. You're going to come because you think you have a place to play, you're going to play early, and you're going to make an impact. And that's
and you like the coaches, and you think the coaches are
and you think the coaches are going in the right direction.
That's right.
And
every team has pockets of empty seats in their stadium, even Alabama.
And so they've all got irrational fans that are way – Alabama's fans are probably worse than ours.
Oh, God, they're terrible. I mean, because if they're not undefeated playing for national title, they're pissed. You know, it's – y'all still there?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I lost you. Anyway, it's everywhere. And, you know, at some point – maybe I stole this from someone. I just keep looking at this going – how many years do we have to be patient? After how many years am I not a jerk if I boo? And I'm not going to boo. I'm not saying that. I don't want to. That's not me. I'm like Jimmy G. I just leave. You know, I just bail.
Yeah.
But you know, bitching about the fans when we call a timeout on a kickoff, or we give up the punt return that makes every single sports show across the world the next day, when we get obliterated at home by a group of five, whatever they are, team, you know, we get made fools of in our own stadium after blowing a lead. I mean, at what point do we just say, well, how do we voice our displeasure? Just don't go. You know, what do we do? I mean, I don't know. I just keep, you know, this product on the field sucks, but you guys and the fans are the problem. I'm not buying that.
Yeah, all good points. Anybody else have a rant that they want to run?
Just real quick, if you're a cable or satellite company and you carry the SEC network, you got to have the alternate with it.
Yes.
Ah, good point.
Yeah, that is a good point.
And even more, do not add insult to injury by having two SEC network channels and then playing the same game on both of them. So just in fact, I'll expand that to a rant, Jimmy G, and explain what we're talking about, because some of you may have this in your own TV markets and may want to be able to raise the issue as well. We were, again, in the midst of horse pod, so obviously the Razorback game was of secondary concern to us, but in Lexington, Kentucky, they do in fact have two SEC network channels on the cable system there. However, being in a different area of the SEC, we were understandably concerned whether the Razorback game would be on, and realized that in that locality it was on the alternate channel. Well, of the two, they were both playing Florida versus our very good friends at Colorado State. And so two channels, same game playing at the same time. So luckily we had access to God's own internet and the ability to stream the game, so all was well. But a little bit of dicey times in Lexington, Kentucky over the weekend. Tom, you have a rant you want to blossom into a full one, or you?
No, I just chimed in with the other one.
Yeah, good one. Okay, anyone else have any concluding thoughts or anything they want to add to the pod? Okay. Well, we will be back to you next week and hopefully get back on schedule with our once weekly podcasts after the Auburn game and give you a report on that. We'll have a lottery to see how close our outrageous scores got, and we'll let you know that next week. In the meantime, thank you for joining us. Keep rooting on those Hogs, as difficult as it may be this year, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us.